I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, the dust has settled on the regular season, and the 2014 NBA playoffs preview continues at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Tonight, we're in the Quicken Loans studios, and now we're going to turn our attention to the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Memphis Grizzlies. OKC Thunder finished the regular season 59-23. The Memphis Grizzlies, with a 50-win season, 32 losses on the year. They played very well as of late, which means this will make for a very exciting matchup in the first round of the playoffs. Gets underway Saturday night at Chesapeake Arena in OKC, 9:30 Eastern Time. It's so wonderful to have back with us this weekend News Channel 4's very own Bob Berry Jr. How are you, Bobby?
Good, E. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is absolutely my favorite time of the year as we get set for the playoffs, and we want to break it all down. And you look at the season series between these two teams. Oklahoma City, they took care of business 3-1. Memphis, of course, didn't have all of their top players, but this is a team that you cannot overlook. And I would consider, out of the Western Conference, they are really an underdog.
Well, it's, the Thunder had a strange season. I mean, there have been a lot of criticism in the second half because of their poor play on defense, and yet we were scratching our heads last night going, okay, this team has really played poor defense since the All-Star break, but Kevin Durant should win the MVP award. I really feel that way. Mm-hmm. He just won his fourth scoring title. They played most of the second half of the season without three starters, and they won 59 games, and yet we're sitting here criticizing him. But they really have. They've confounded us more than once late in the season. They've had great games, like when they ended the Spurs' 19-game winning streak. And Oklahoma City played such great defense that night. They went out to L.A. a week or so ago against the Clippers in the game we didn't think they'd win, and they locked them down and won 107-101. But then they'll give up 40-point games left and right to people like Gerald Green from Phoenix and Jody Meeks from the Lakers and Tyreek Evans in New Orleans at 41 against him the other night. So they've just been giving up career nights to guys left and right defensively, and that would be my concern for the Thunder, Elissa, is they better pick it up on a consistent basis, or they'll get bounced by the Grizzlies in the first round.
Well, I was going to say, of course, this new season begins. Everything starts on Saturday. I mean, give us a sense, though, as they go into this game, how do you think Oklahoma City is playing at this point?
Well, like I said, offensively, there's no problem. You have Kevin Durant playing at the highest point of his career. Russell Westbrook, since coming back from missing a total of 30 games this year, has been great, as usual. Mm-hmm. Serge Ibaka he's just on the cusp of being an all-star. So they don't have a problem scoring points, but they can't stop anybody on the perimeter, or at least they haven't, let's put it that way, most of the time. And like I said, I could keep going on. They most recently played against the Pistons that I hadn't even heard of. Kentavious Caldwell,
yeah.
Pope. I had to go deep into my flip cards to find out who this guy was. And he had a career high by halftime against the Thunder and ended up with 30 in the game. And Kyle Singler, the former Duke star, was 2 points off his career high against the Thunder. So it's been a little frustrating to hear Scott Brooks after game say, well, we're a really pretty good defensive team. You're thinking, not in the second half of the season you haven't been. And yet, like I said, it's almost like they step on the gas when they need to and they let off when they can afford it, I guess. And so I would say, when you say how have they played going into the playoffs, I would say they've been inconsistent. They're extremely talented. They can win an NBA championship if they, get to it. But they could also lose in the first round, and I wouldn't be shocked because they're playing a Grizzlies team now that's whole, as NBA analyst Steve Kerr, the former player, said the other day, whole for the first time because they've got all their guys back, and we know how bruising they play. You know that. I used to play at Oklahoma when you were an all-star. I mean, you got in there and owned the inside, and that's what the Grizzlies do. And that could be trouble for the Thunder.
Well, they are, as you said, you know, they have their entire team back. They're at full strength. But I think one of my concerns is just as you're talking about, the size, the style they play. They like to slow it down. They like to back you in. It's that old kind of style. And I just have to wonder defensively, you know, what is OKC going to do?
Well, I think, you know, obviously Serge Ibaka and the rookie Steven Adams, if he gets some minutes, and Kendrick Perkins will be challenged like they always are. But, I mean, Perkins and Zach Randolph have gone at it in the locker room, you know, in the hallway across from the locker room before. So, I mean, that we always like it when they get together because right. they'll push and shove, and it'll continue on, you know, maybe into the parking lot. Who knows? But they'll have to watch those two guys inside. As somebody pointed out to me the other day, in this day and age of the NBA, in my opinion, it's so forward or guard oriented. And yet, you know, here's Memphis with two inside power guys, not one, but two with the return of Marc Gasol. So that's the problem for anybody. And then Mike Conley, the way he's playing, Tony Allen is just annoying. It's the best word for him. The former Oklahoma State star is so good defensively. And he's annoyed Kevin Durant for years every time they go against each other. So I just, when people were asking me a few days ago, who would you think the Thunder would match up best with in the opening round, I said, anybody but Memphis and the Spurs. I mean, I would have preferred Oklahoma City to open with Dallas or even Golden State if they would have fallen to the third seed. But Memphis, just because of their power and their style, as you call it, could be really problematic. Even if Oklahoma City advances, I'm just saying it might be taxing on them physically. Just getting through that first round and going forward toward the finals, perhaps.
No doubt about it. Memphis, they definitely want to walk it up style. You are listening to the voice of Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4 Television out of Oklahoma City as we get set and ready for the Thunder and the Grizz. And one of the matchups I'm keeping an eye on, we're talking about the boys in the paint, Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol. I mean, even when I think back to the game against Dallas and Memphis, I mean, Memphis, the Grizz, they had 58 points in the paint. I mean, that's one thing defensively. I mean, the Thunder are really going to have to lock up the paint.
They will, and there was, again, you know, Gasol did not play in one of the games, the first game, I think, of the year, when the teams played in Memphis. The Thunder won 116-100, and Gasol did not play, and Ibaka had a pretty nice game. But then another game in Oklahoma City, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, I want to say in early February, I think Ibaka went for 21-12. So, and Serge is capable. Serge is, in my opinion, if not the best shot blocker in the NBA, he's right up there because he alters so much thinking when guys bring in to finish, and he's so quick on the lead. So he can do it that way, but we know what Marc Gasol is when he's healthy. He's very underrated as a mid-range guy from 15 feet, but then when he gets inside going hook shot with either hand and crashing the offensive boards and just pushing and shoving around, it can really get guys frustrated in a hurry. So that will be an interesting matchup. Nobody for the Thunder has ever really been able to handle Zach Randolph. He's always kind of had his way. And in fact, one game earlier this year, he had 13 points and 13 rebounds, and we all felt like, wow, the Thunder did a really great job against Zach Randolph, you know, only held to 13 and 13. So Durant and Westbrook will have to score like they do, but also facilitate and get those other guys like Caron Butler, who's been a nice pickup for Oklahoma City with all of his championship experience and playoff experience. And Reggie Jackson offensively has really been good this year. Where he lacks is defensively, but Reggie can score and blow past anybody, and he's been effective. So lots of offensive firepower for the Thunder. But, yeah, they'll have to watch out for the big boys in Memphis.
You know, Bobby, you were talking about as far as a powerful tandem between Durant and Westbrook. Can you kind of give all of our listeners tonight just an update on Russell? I mean, I know he missed, 27 games with that right knee and, you know, the surgery and stuff like that. But, I mean, over the past 18 games, he's averaged 23 points and 7 assists per game. I mean, he's playing at a very high level. I mean, does that knee bother him at all? I mean, what is he doing about that?
Pretty scary in the regular season finale against Detroit. A minute and 15 in, he got slammed to the court. It was just kind of a freakish play when he broke away off a steal and went in for a dunk and got slammed hard and grabbed his knee and writhed around on the floor.
Wow.
Literally, you know, 75 seconds into the game. So that was scary. But then he got up and ended up having a great game. So he's the same old Russell to me. He missed actually a total of 30 games when it was all told this past season, regular season. But yet, we don't see any problems. We don't hear of anything about swelling, which is what he said caused the third knee operation after Christmas break. He said he was never in any pain, but his knee just kept swelling and was having to be drained all of the time. So we haven't heard any talk about that in the second half of the season. He appears just as explosive to the rim as he's ever been. He can take so many people off the bounce. He's knocking down his jumpers. I would say one thing that surprised me a little bit about the Thunder, again, I know it sounds like I'm ripping them, but they have taken way too many three-point shots in the last 2 weeks. So for some reason, when they've gotten into crunch time or been in situations where they've needed points or had to rally, it's kind of gone back to the Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook game of 4 or 5 years ago when they were 1 or 2 years into the league, when it was just like, oh, we're the All-Stars. We got to take the team, throw it on our back, and go fire from anywhere and win.
Okay, the 2014 NBA playoffs, we are getting you ready. Oklahoma City, Memphis, Saturday night, 9:30 Eastern time. Bob Berry Jr. from News Channel 4 has been with us. Thank you so much, and I look forward to catching up with you real soon. Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you, E.
Much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Okay, the long and lengthy NBA regular season is over, and we want to welcome you back to the fastest 2 hours in radio as we continue to talk about the 2014 NBA playoffs. A number of exciting matchups that we are going to be tracking for you. And right now, we're going to focus our attention on the Western Conference. All 8 teams very capable of making a deep run, and a lot of matchups we're keeping our eye on, of course, is the San Antonio Spurs and the Dallas Mavericks, a great in-state rivalry. Game 1 will be Sunday at 1 o'clock Eastern time on TNT in San Antonio. We are so pleased to welcome in Rodney Fisher. He is with RF Sports up in Dallas. He's the executive producer and host. He covers the NBA very, very closely. It's good to have you with us tonight. Thank you, Rodney.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, all right. So the stage is set. The Spurs have been absolutely amazing all season long. I mean, can you believe they have another 62-win season? They secure the best record in the league, 62-20, and Dallas with 49 wins on the year. How do you see this particular matchup playing out in the playoffs?
Well, it's going to be a tough matchup. I don't think there's really any easy matchups in the Western Conference this season, just by the way these teams have finished out. The Mavericks, you can argue that they're playing pretty much their best ball the last 10 games. The last 10 have been 6-4 against some teams that are going to be in the playoffs. They've won some games, but San Antonio kind of has the Mavericks' number. I mean, they've lost 9 straight to San Antonio, and that goes back, you know, more than just one season. Mm-hmm. It goes back 2 seasons. So I think it's going to be a tough matchup, but I've got to give the edge to the San Antonio Spurs, another 60-plus game win season. So I got to give the edge to them. I think it'll be tough. I think the Mavs will make it interesting.
You know, a lot of folks are saying that. They are counting Dallas out and not giving them a chance. But I'll tell you what, I mean, with Dirk, anything is possible. But if you even look beyond that, really, Monte Ellis, I mean, he caught fire against Memphis in the fourth quarter. And he is a guy, you've seen this, Rodney, he is very capable of hitting some big-time shots, even against Portland earlier in the year.
Absolutely. He's got some game winners for the team already in his first season with the Mavericks. You know, the thing for the Mavericks is defensively, they got to find a way to stop some of the other perimeter players like Danny Green, who's really torched the Mavericks this season, and prevent him from shooting the three ball. If they can do that, they've got a chance. I like the way they played. It just seems like for some reason, San Antonio's kind of got that team that just matches up so well with the Mavericks and can create their own problems.
The executive producer and host of RF Sports, rfsports.com, and his dad, Rodney Fisher, is joining us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I think another key for Dallas, yeah, we're talking about Dirk and Monte, but the other guys that got to do some heavy lifting is the bench. Bench production is going to be absolutely critical in order for them to make a run.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you look at the bench for San Antonio, they got to match that intensity and that level. You know, San Antonio this entire season did not have a guy that averaged over 30 minutes a game.
I know.
So they're going to play their entire bench. You know, for Dallas, you know, my guy's Brandon Wright. I know you've seen him play.
Oh, yeah.
He can come in there and make a big difference coming off the bench. And then, of course, bringing in Devin Harris to play a little guard as well. So Dallas has got to match that, along with Vince Carter, can't count him out also. They've got to match that intensity. I think, you know, for Rick Carlisle, for the way he's coached his team, he's got a 500 record against the Spurs in the playoffs, so he's got to rely on his expertise and try to put the right game plan together to make this interesting for the Mavericks.
Of course, the Dallas Mavericks, Brandon Wright, joining us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio. I had a chance to catch up with him earlier in the week, and I know, Rodney, you're at all those games. Isn't it amazing just to watch how much he has evolved as a player? I mean, he's shooting 67% from the floor. You ever seen a more efficient player than Brandon Wright?
No, I haven't. And the way he's come along from fighting for minutes to now being a big part of this team is really commendable on him. I mean, he worked out the offseason to get better, work on his game. And then defensively, he's been a force as well, too. That block he had in the Phoenix game, I mean, helped
oh, yeah.
Mavericks make the playoffs. So, you know, he's been a great all-around player, a very, very humble guy, and he fits that Mavericks mold that they've tried to create over the last few seasons. So I think he's a perfect fit. I think he can only go up from here. So I hope the playoffs is really a kind of a coming out party for him to get the league on notice that Brandon Wright is here and he's here to play.
Hey, Rodney, we were out in L.A. together. How about that perfect game from him, too? 10 for 10 and 3 from 3 from the free throw line.
I mean, can you believe that? I mean, have you seen a Maverick go have a perfect game?
Yeah.
I mean, for him to do that at his size and the way he plays, how to play down low and be physical, especially against a team like the Clippers, and also the Lakers as well, and the way he played in those games, it speaks highly of the way he is and his work ethic and what he's able to do.
And immediately in postgame, deflected any praise from himself but to his teammates, credited his teammates putting him in the right place and being able to hit those high percentage shots. We've got to give some credit to San Antonio. We're talking about 62 wins in the regular season, and it all starts at the top with head coach Greg Popovich. What's been your impressions and your takeaways from just another outstanding coaching job?
You know, with Greg, everyone in the media, for some reason, has a love-hate relationship with Greg Popovich. You know, you don't know how he's going to answer your questions when you ask him. Those that have been there. But you have to respect him for what he's been able to do. And he's in San Antonio, so he flies below the radar. But he's on any basketball fan's radar for what he's done with that team, from bringing guys in and putting them on from a D-League roster. He pulls from there. He pulls from overseas. And he really gets these guys that fit his mold and his way of thinking and the way that he wants his team to play. And for him to be able to do it for so long, I mean, it's just incredible. It's incredible. And you know he's still not thinking about – he doesn't care if his guys don't play the last couple of games or if he sits them against the Miami Heat in the middle of the season. His goal is to win a championship, and he knows the way he had it in his grasp in that game 6 of last season that he wants it all this year. So I think he's got a new intensity. I think Tim Duncan has an intensity, Ginobili, Parker as well. From getting so close, I'm really going to be interested to see how they come out in game one.
Rodney, thanks so much. Send my best to your dad, and we will talk to you again real soon. Thank you, Rodney.
Thank you.
You bet. Much more straight ahead this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at @eRadioSports, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and earlier this week I was up in Dallas and I had an opportunity to sit down and do an exclusive, a very special interview with Brian Cuban. We wanted to invite him back on the show and share his personal journey, his memoir and story on Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. Let's take a listen to my special interview with Brian Cuban.
And Brian, it's such an honor to have you on our show this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what has the past 7 months been like for you and the type of response that you have received?
It's been incredible. The support from my family and the support from people who have reached out to me about my book, who have identified with the various aspects of my book, whether it be eating disorders, bullying, or addiction. You know, they've reached out to me and said, thank you. I thought I was the only one going through this. I get at least one email a week with that message. Because that's very common. The shame, especially with eating disorders, the shame associated with it, and for men, it's just absolutely terrible. You know, you think you are the only one alone, completely alone and completely isolated. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote Shattered Image. I wanted people to know you're not alone. There is hope. Just reach out.
It is a compelling read, no doubt about it. And I would assume, Brian, that it's been very cathartic and healing for you, because when you're helping others, you're helping yourself, and there's a full circle that takes place there.
Absolutely. I think most of these self-help memoirs start out as cathartic experiences, and like most of them, they hopefully turn into awareness experiences. It was actually absolutely part of my healing process in writing it. Now the help I give to others and the awareness I create is also part of my healing process. Recovery is a lifelong deal.
You know, it's interesting too, with us being a sports show, we're always talking about, on occasions, we talk about body image, mm-hmm. and I was familiar with the terms anorexia and bulimia. I've had girlfriends that have struggled mm-hmm. with that, but I wasn't familiar with BDD, the acronym. And so I'd love for you just to kind of expound on that and share with our viewers and our listeners what exactly it is.
Sure. In layman's term, body dysmorphic disorder is when someone takes a small or non-existent defect in their body, for me it was my stomach, and exaggerates it to the point in the reflection where they are unable to function normally in life. For some people it's stomach, for some people it's plastic surgery. People go through hundreds of thousands of dollars in plastic surgery. I did the same thing. The only reason I stopped having plastic surgery is because I went broke. I couldn't put any more money on my credit card. And, you know, or some people, they exaggerate pimples on their face and they isolate. They have eating disorders. They go into addiction. You know, they may abuse steroids. I did all that stuff. And, you know, that's what it is.
How can this be? How could this have happened to you? Because I look, you know, I read off that long list of resume. You're so accomplished, an attorney, an activist. You've done all these amazing things. Would you mind sharing your personal journey and kind of pinpoint for us where this all began?
Well, like with most people who, you know, may have self-image issues, it began in childhood. I had a very difficult relationship with my mom. There was a lot of what we call now fat shaming, a term that didn't exist then, back in the 70s. She would say things like, if you eat too much of that Chef Boyardee ravioli, you're going to be a fat pig. And obviously very hurtful. I was a middle child syndrome, very shy. And it would be hurtful to anyone, but I think me, it really, you know, caused some damage. And she had had those things done to her by her mom, as is often these things are generational in nature. So her mom gave her the tools to, you know, say those things to me. And, you know, and that's what happened. And because of those things, and as I started to eat more, you know, the comfort, depression set in. I started to eat more. I started to get heavier. By the time I was 11 or so, I was, you know, pushing 270 and, you know, an obese child. And then the bullying started at school. And the bullying at school over my weight, the fat teasing, and I was even physically assaulted was pretty bad. And that kind of shaped how I saw myself moving into my freshman year at Penn State, when I finally said to myself, my whole world is out of control. What do I have control over? What made me feel good? Food. Although instead of eating more, I decided what's going to make me feel good is to starve myself, because that will, you know, the skinnier I would get, that will get me acceptance. That will get me that date to the prom that I wanted. That will get me to finally be able to kiss a girl or hold a girl's hand. Those kids that I wanted to be like so badly in high school. And that was the beginning of my eating disorder. And then later on, it transitioned to bulimia, and I stayed bulimic till I was 45 years old.
We're going to step aside and take a quick commercial break, and we will be rejoined with Brian Cuban and continue to listen to his story and, of course, his book that is out, Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. And welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in radio at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and we're going to pick up where we left off before we went to commercial break and continue with our conversation with Brian Cuban, talking about his book, Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder.
Talking about, you know, how basically you were attacked, you know, coming home from school one day.
That's right. I call it the day of the gold pants, because Mark, my older brother, had given me these shiny gold kind of pre-disco disco pants, and I wore them all the time because, you know, I love Mark. You know, we're very close, and I'd wear them to junior high. Here they call it middle school, all the time. But Mark wasn't a big guy, so they were tight on me, but I didn't care. I wore them, and my stomach hung out over them, and the kid teased me.
Proud, your big brother gave
it. Yeah, and the kids teased me, and they were shiny satin. You know, they looked goofy. My butt looked like 15 cats in there because they were so tight. And one day I'm walking home from school, sort of hanging around the group of popular kids like I always did, and you let them make fun of you, and you let them abuse you, just hoping that you'll get some acceptance. And, you know, and you don't, but you just keep hanging around, hoping to catch some of that popularity. They start making fun of them. Ah, Cuban, your stomach's hanging out. You need a bra. Get a bra. You know, the man boob things when you're young and you're heavy. And then all of a sudden, one of them starts pulling at them. Then all of a sudden, they all join in and start pulling at them. Next thing I know, they're tearing them off me. Then they ripped them into shreds and threw them in the street, leaving me in my tidy whiteies at 11 years old to walk a mile home to my house. It was so traumatic that I could go to that point in Pittsburgh, PA, where I grew up, Mount Lebanon, and show you exactly where it happened today.
What did you do when you got home?
I threw the scraps of the pants away, totally ashamed, and hoped it would never come up, and it didn't. Totally ashamed, one, that, you know, that I was, you know, they had validated everything my mom told me. I was a fat, dumb bunny who couldn't stand up for himself. I had disappointed my older brother who had given me these pants. I had disappointed my parents in not being able to stand up for myself. And I had become what I had been told, you know, this fat, stupid kid. And that was a pivotal moment in how I would see myself.
What gave you the courage to finally stand up and to be able to share your story? Because I would assume, Brian, that would be really scary. I mean, you share some very intimate things about your journey and what a 30-year secret as far as with some of the eating disorders, the depression, and even alcoholism.
My aha moment was I was standing in the parking lot of a local psychiatric facility for the second time, going there for the second time, and I'm standing in that parking lot, and my girlfriend, who had stuck with me, we've been together almost 9 years now, was crying because I had been unfaithful in an alcoholic blackout. And I'm thinking, you know what? I don't have another trip back here. I'd also had a previous near suicide attempt, only to be saved by my brothers at the last second, literally at the last second. And I thought to myself, standing in that parking lot, she's crying, I'm thinking she's gone. I don't have another trip back here. I'll be dead. You know, but what scared me worse than that? The thought that I was about to lose my family. Because family may love you unconditionally, but there are limits on their willingness to watch you destroy yourself if you're not going to put yourself in a position of recovery. And Mark, Jeff, my dad, you know, that they had never said those things to me, but I just knew that I was reaching that moment. And that just terrified me, because our father raised the three of us brothers, brothers, brothers. He would joke. He'd go, wives may come and go, and for me, they certainly have. One more and I get a free set of steak knives. One more. They say, wives may come and go. Girlfriends may come and go. You know, you hope they don't, but when push comes to shove, all you have is each other. And no matter what happens in your lives, no matter where you go, no matter what's going on, be there. Call. Love. And that stuff, he would pound that into us, and that stuck with us. You know, it's not an accident that all these years later we all live within a mile of each other in Dallas, Texas, mm-hmm. including my father. Right. And that thought that I was about to lose what my father had stressed so heavily, terrified me into taking that first step into recovery. That first small step, the next day, I walked into my shrink, who I'd been seeing for a few years, lying, just depression over marriages, give me medication. He didn't know about the eating disorders. He didn't know about, you know, the drug abuse. And people, how could he not know? Well, you know, shrinks aren't clairvoyant. You know, if you're not honest with them, they can only deal with honesty. And it's kind of funny. People say, well, why wouldn't you be honest with your shrink? Well, shame knows no hourly rate. Okay, when you are ashamed, you don't care. You're not even gonna, you know, you may not even confide in your treatment provider. So I walked in and I told him about all these things, had a good cry. Didn't tell him about the eating disorder, though. I'd rather admit I was a cocaine addict than had an eating disorder. That's how shameful it was. But it was the first step in recovery, the honesty, getting honest about where I was presently. The next day was even harder. I went over to my father's house, knocked on his door, walking distance from me, still lives now. And, you know, that back then he was in his 70s. I said, Dad, you know, I need to talk to you. I sat on the couch with him and told him everything but the eating disorder, told him about all this stuff, the near suicide attempt. And he said, Brian, come move in with me. I love you. We'll get through this. I was that 11-year-old little boy wanting to have that talk with his father all those years ago, but he was too afraid, you know, to have, because he didn't know what the response would be, because he was so ashamed. And I got the response that I wanted. And that was the next step, getting honest with family. And it just, from there, you know, there a lot of therapy. I'm still on therapy today. I'm still on medication today. A lot of therapy. A lot of steps forward, a lot of steps backwards. Obviously, I went in a 12-step because, you know, it was kind of funny. My psychiatrist was like, well, what do you want to do? Well, I want to live. And he goes, well, we have a problem here. You're a freaking alcoholic drug addict. Okay, we can't address all these other issues until you get that under control. Right? You have to have a clear head. So we talked about rehab, this, that, and we decided I would go in a 12-step. And I walked in a 12-step and never looked back. Never looked back. I just had my 7-year sober birthday, April 8th.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And I never looked back I never engaged in eating disorder behavior again. Mm-hmm. I never engaged in drug abuse. I never engaged in alcohol. And those things all got easier as I became more accepting of myself and learned to love myself for who I was, a quiet, shy kid. I didn't need to be anything else but that. And that's okay.
That's remarkable because you really retrained your inner voice and just been able to arrest those demons that had tormented you for so many years. I mean, you have come such a long ways.
And I have a long ways to go. I mean, there are still thoughts. People all ask me all the time, are you cured? I'm like, well, what does cured mean to you? Do I still have thoughts about bulimia? Sure. If I eat a full meal and I'm, you know, whatever, do those thoughts go through my head? Sure. Do I have other thoughts? Sure. But how I respond to those thoughts has changed. That's what's changed, and that's through a lot of therapy. So it's an ongoing process. And again, teaching people about my recovery and hoping they can take something from that. I'm not a treatment provider. I'm not a psychiatrist. If people can take something from my recovery that will help them step forward, even if it's just one little step and drop that wall of shame, that's all I can hope for.
I have to ask you, too, because there's a wonderful picture in your book when the Dallas Mavericks won the 2011 championship, and your father and of course, your older brother, Mark, and Jeff. What was going through your mind when what an incredible moment for the Cuban family.
Being proud of Mark. I mean, if it wasn't for Mark, I'm not a huge NBA fan. I love the Mavs because I love my brother, and I've always been clear about that. You know, if Mark didn't own the Mavs, now if he sold them now, I'd probably, you know, obviously I've developed an allegiance. But, you know, I was happy for Mark, and that's what that moment was all about. I was happy for my father, for being proud of his son. I was happy for my brother. I was happy for my family. That's what that was to me.
Was there any temptation there when you were in Miami to, kind of regress back to any of those old behaviors at all?
It's funny you bring that up because Miami was a huge parting spot for me for going down there and doing drugs back in the day. And no, and that's actually why I didn't go down there in 2006, okay, because I was afraid of that. But no, there was none at all. We actually went to the after party at Live Nightclub in Miami. There was marijuana smoke everywhere. There was alcohol everywhere. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend and I had a great time. Yeah, that's because there are different types of addicts. The basics are all the same, but I don't have any history in my family. It was never about that. It was about me seeing myself in a certain way. What destructive behavior could I engage in to gain acceptance? If I no longer feel I need to be accepted, other than for who I am, those thoughts go away.
So, Brian, if someone's tuning in or watching us right now by television, what advice would you give if they know somebody that is struggling with, eating disorders, alcoholism? And we all have had to experience that within reach of someone in our family or friends.
Whether it's eating disorders, alcoholism, drug addiction, the old saying is true. People have to want to help themselves. But what you can do is educate yourself and put them in a position to recover if they choose to help themselves. That's all you can do. Whether that's by just being there, developing a relationship of love, of trust, and just being ready to listen.
But sometimes it's so hard because you feel so helpless because you want to fix that person.
It is.
You're not willing to do it.
That's right. And if it's alcoholism or addiction, there are groups, support groups for people going through that. If it's an eating disorder, you can go to the National Eating Disorder website and they have great resources on how to deal with friends who may have an eating disorder and you don't know what to say.
Of course, the title of the book is Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder, having a candid conversation with Brian Cuban. And of course, where can they go and get a copy of the book?
You can go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. It's not available in bookstores. You have to go to one of those two places.
I would highly encourage you. I don't know what's on your calendar and schedule, but I would love for you to release a book specifically geared towards bullying, because I thought you really talked about it. And that's really been at the forefront nationally, especially what went down in the Miami Dolphins locker room this past fall.
I agree. I mean, and I wrote a blog about that called I Am Jonathan Martin. And even, adults in certain situations, adults can be bullied. If there's a power differential at the workplace, if there is repetitive conduct, the adult bullying can occur. Now, I've also been an advocate of the fact that, because someone says mean things to you on Twitter or Facebook does not mean you're being bullied. Okay, because you can always get off Twitter or Facebook. Okay, but if you were in a special relationship, a marriage, a workplace situation where you can't just quit. There can be bullying in those situations, and I identified and empathized a lot of with what Jonathan Martin went through. And for people to say because you're 6'5 and 300 pounds or because you're in a violent sport that you can't be bullied, it's come on. That buys into every bullying stereotype and every male-female stereotype there is.
Absolutely. You know, the final thought for you, too, is that I would just, you know, share with all of our parents that are listening, it's so important that we choose our words wisely. And you were talking about that dynamic, your relationship with your mom, and it just seems like it's great that you have that understanding of where she's come from and what she's navigated through, because hurting people hurt people.
Absolutely. My mom has been a big part of my recovery.
Yes.
We have a very good relationship.
Wonderful.
Now. I was very lucky. Unlike a lot of families, I had a mother who was willing to explore where she was. Not about fault. It's about understanding. And once I was able to understand her life, I was able to forgive. Forgiveness is a huge part of recovery. It was for me. And I think it is for a lot of people.
It is a wonderful book titled Shatter Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. And Brian, it's such a pleasure and
honor.
Thank
you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. And congratulations on your Mavericks.
Thank you. Yes.
Hope you enjoyed that special interview with Brian Cuban, successful lawyer, activist, television host, and now a best-selling author who, of course, released his book 7 months ago and memoir where he courageously shares his personal account and struggles with eating disorders, BDD, and addiction. And I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of the book, Shattered Image, My Triumph Over Body Dysmorphic Disorder. Also, a very special thank you to all of our guests in our lineup tonight. Bob Berry Jr. with News Channel 4 out of Oklahoma City, getting you set and ready for the Oklahoma City Thunder and Memphis as they will be set to tip on Saturday night at Chesapeake Arena. Rodney Fisher from RF Sports, rfsports.com. Chris Donnelly, How the Yankees Explain New York. Wonderful book. You got to go and get it. And Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. We also had a very special interview and exclusive with Dallas Mavericks' Brandon Wright. Join us online at eradiosports.com. And always for the biggest and the best in sports, YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Don't drink and drive.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.